Welcome back, folks. Episode 33, Get a Grip on Lighting. On today's show, we're honored to have Dr. Venkat from the University of Toronto. He is the Director of Scientific Operations and the Director of the Smart Sustainable Lighting Network. We talked about a lot of stuff, the need of lighting in the world, whether lighting is a human right, a whole bunch of other things. It was really interesting conversation. This guy's a heavy hitter, folks, for the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. And we're so happy that he came in studio and sat down with us for, what, Greg, about an hour or so?
Yeah, it was a good conversation. Really good.
Yeah, it was a good one. You guys should listen to this. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Kurtzon Lighting. Go to KURTZON.com. That's Kurtzon.com. Greg, why are we going there?
Well, because they have specialty products, and the one we want to talk about today is medical light fixtures, and also to tie into this podcast.
Hey, Maddie, throw that screen up there, the medical light fixtures for our YouTube watchers. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, and to tie into this podcast, the slogan on the Kurtzon website is illuminating your world. So you'll hear more about that when you listen to the podcast. But in terms of medical light fixtures, they actually have exam room troffers, operating room troffers, MRI downlights, surgical downlights, patient room troffers. So really, they cover everything you need for a medical facility in terms of specialized light fixtures meant just for those applications.
I mean, if you're building a hospital, you got to go to Kurtzon.com. If you're renovating a hospital, if you're involved in that sort of thing and you're an engineer or you're a lighting specifier, go to KURTZON.com, specification grade, Kurtzon. Best warranty, most honest warranty in the lighting business, Greg, that 5/10. I really like that too. I keep talking about it, but I wish more manufacturers would get involved with that one.
They should, for sure. And it states it, like you said, right on their website and explains it up front. So that's the best you can ask for.
Yeah, you don't have to dig anywhere. This episode of the podcast and every episode is brought to you by the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. That's NAILD.org. Greg and I are both members. Come on, man. You don't know. Do you know what happened before you started selling LEDs, son? You got to take yourself some LS1. Go to NAILD.org. That's NAILD.org for information on joining this association, educational programs. And what else we got down there, Greg? Nailed. Coming to the conference.
Networking, and just overall a good educational background where you can really learn everything you need to know about lighting to be successful.
Agreed. And we won't hold you up anymore. This is episode 33, Dr. Venkat on Get a Grip on Lighting. Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Dr. Venkat.
Good morning. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. Thanks for coming on and being in studio. Always nice. So,
yeah, it is nice. Wish you were here, Greg. So, Dr. Venkat, tell us a little bit about the your role as Director of Scientific Operations at the Impact Center at the University of Toronto.
So the Impact Center at University of Toronto has, I mean, it's an unusual department, I mean, like within the university setup. We are a cross-disciplinary research center with a focus on bringing science to society. By that, what we mean is that, I mean, like a place like University of Toronto, many people really do not know that we spent about $2 billion every year on research, not on infrastructure, not on salaries, purely on research.
Okay. Wow.
$2 billion, that's about, I mean, like $3 million per day. I mean, like if you roughly calculate that, that's a lot of investment, but the return on investment is also fairly high. If you consider, I mean, like we are second only to Harvard University in terms of number of papers published. Compared to the amount of investment that goes in other big US universities, we do give, I mean, like a lot of return on investment, provided the way that you define that return on investment.
Sure. Okay? So you're saying you're spending $2 billion Canadian a year.
Yeah.
On research at the University of Toronto?
Yeah, it's a big university.
That's
It's a big university. It's one of the top 10 universities in the world. I mean, like, we are big. I mean, like, we do have, I mean, like, large faculty. I mean, like, a large number of students and one of the world leaders in research. I mean, but the question is, I mean, like, how do you define return on investment? Okay. Mm. Typically, in an academic setting, I mean, like, it's defined as, I mean, like, the number of papers published. I mean, like, the peer recognition that you get from other
experts. What about citings of those papers?
Yeah, I mean, like, citations and, I mean, like the invitations to lead conferences and the big awards like Nobel Prizes and things like that. Actually.
So some of the return on investment is social recognition for the University of Toronto?
Yeah, it's more largely built around the peer recognition.
Okay.
So that other experts should call you as the best in the field. I mean, like that's what, I mean, like academic institutions largely focus on research strive for. Okay.
Okay.
And teaching is a big part of that, actually, because, I mean, like you want to create, I mean, like next generation leaders as well in research. Okay. But at Impact Center, I mean, like, we thought, I mean, like, in a different way. I mean, like, because we create a lot of knowledge, okay? This knowledge, I mean, like, is pretty much, I mean, like, no use to society unless you convert that as products and services.
Sure.
Okay? So, I mean, like, I publish a paper. I mean, like, somebody else cites that. I mean, like, and we both are happy about that.
But that's changed in academics a little bit. For in the past, they didn't care at all whether it applied. Yeah. So what has changed at the University of Toronto and other universities where they now, I see there's this thrust to take that research, to take that information and find applications in the real world for it. When did that change and why?
Well, I mean, like, it's not a sudden change. I mean, like, it has been a gradual change over a few decades now. I mean, like, okay. One of the biggest thing that caused this change, in my opinion, is that, I mean, like, a lot of corporate labs used to engage in fundamental research. In the past, I mean, like, we have IBM Bell Labs, okay?
Okay.
And they used to be doing research, I mean, like, which resulted in transistors, lasers, I mean, like, and a whole bunch of, I mean, like, technologies which fundamentally reshaped, I mean, like, the way
like
that
Xerox is another one.
Yeah,
the Xerox
I mean, like, IBM, yeah. ExxonMobil Lab, I mean, like, Dow Chemicals. Everybody had huge labs where they hired the best of the world's talent and led them free on fundamental research. And then they didn't even think about, I mean, like, what are we going to do with that, actually? But in the past few decades, the corporates have started focusing a lot on, I mean, like, return on investment. I mean, like, the shareholder value,
sure.
I mean, like, for tomorrow, I mean, like, quarterly shareholder report, okay? So the bottom line, I mean, like, started dictating everything, and slowly, one by one, everybody chopped off that model, okay? And in my opinion, that's a very valuable model. Sitting in industry, doing fundamental research is a great thing, I mean, like, to contribute to society. Having moved that model, there was a big hole, I mean, like, that universities have to fill. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and naturally, I mean, like, they stepped up into that. And now, I mean, like, increasingly people are starting to ask that question, where does my knowledge go? Okay. As a researcher, I want to see, I mean, like, in my lifetime, something is done with the knowledge that I generate. Okay. Mm-hmm. If I, say, for example, make a better ceramics that's going to give a better handle on your mug, I mean, like, that doesn't break, okay, I'm going to be happy. Okay. So I'm going to see that, I mean, like, my research has contributed to that. Mm. My research has contributed to the light that you're having
okay.
in this room. Okay.
So you're in charge of you're the director of the Smart Sustainable Lighting Network. Now Greg's going to be really happy that we just said the word lighting.
That's so good. I was just going to find out.
So tell us a little bit about the Smart Sustainable Lighting Network. What is it and why should it exist?
Yeah, I mean, like, continuing on the same theme, I mean, like, one big part of, I mean, like, translating knowledge as benefit to society is to work very closely with industries. Try to understand, I mean, like, what challenges that the industries have in new product development, or, I mean, like, solving existing product problems and things like that. And bring that problem into the university, leverage the expertise that is available in the academic universities. You can't match the width and breadth of R&D that is available, I mean, like, in university, I mean, like, compared to any other companies, okay? So we can very quickly pull together, I mean, like, team of multidisciplinary experts who can help the industry, I mean, like, create the next best product or solve, I mean, like, an existing challenge.
Have you done that yet?
Yeah, we have done that. I mean, like, in the past 10 years, I mean, like, we have done several products. We've worked with a large number of companies, including lighting companies. When there is a theme of, I mean, like, a large number of companies from the same area emerge, we create what are called these as, I mean, like, grassroots industry academia clusters. This is not something that the government dictates. Okay. You can view this as a, I mean, like, a small version of Silicon Valley, I mean, like, or, I mean, like, Boston Biotech Cluster or something like
sure.
that. It's a very grassroots thing. The idea behind this is to bring, I mean, like, four stakeholder groups together. Okay, one is the academic researchers. The second group of people are the industries. The third one is the government agencies that are interested in either energy saving or, I mean, like, industry growth or job creation. We bring them together. The last part is, I mean, like, the end users of lighting. So when we bring all of them together, of course, I mean, like, the critical part of the whole thing is to create, I mean, like, next generation products for the industries, but also, I mean, like, sharing the knowledge, okay, sharing the resources that are available in the universities, help train the students for next generation thing, because, I mean, like, many places, I mean, like, really do not have a lighting program, I mean, like, lighting education.
Greg and I say all the time, there's no such thing as lighting engineers.
Yeah.
Greg, did you want to jump in here now? We have to remember he's out there in Minneapolis. Go ahead, Greg.
Right. So the $2 billion in research, and I assume the Impact Center is a portion of that. You're not managing or responsible
We are a minuscule part of the whole thing. Okay.
Small portion.
Yeah.
So of that portion, how much of it is dedicated towards research and lighting?
We can't really, I mean, like, say that because, I mean, like, I'll probably, I mean, like, during the conversation, it'll surface. Because when we talk about lighting, I mean, like, there are complex challenges. Sometimes, I mean, like, we do nanomaterial research. Sometimes we do heat transfer research, okay? So these are all connected to lighting, but not exactly, I mean, like, in lighting. So you don't know how to count these things, actually. So we don't really, sure. I mean, like, count separately for these things.
So, like, you're talking
about...
What
have you accomplished so far in lighting?
So I mean, like we worked with several companies. Okay, our biggest part is that I mean, like we helped a lot of companies. I mean, like we contributed to their R&D process in creating. I mean, like maybe architectural lighting, automotive headlamps. I mean, like minor scap lamps, medical handheld lighting devices, a whole slew of products. I mean, like that our industry partners are creating. There are challenges, critical challenges associated with that. I don't think that I mean, like I won't ever go and say that I mean, like we did that. Okay. We work together with them. We help them, I mean, like to find that missing piece that helped accelerate their product development.
What about patents? Do you guys count patents? How many patents you apply for or generate or anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, like one of the other critical question is, I mean, like patents. I mean, like, so we don't really, I mean, like count the number of patents. A lot of times, I mean, like when industries want these things, especially, I mean, like in a fast moving industry like lighting, you don't have time to do all these things. You want, I mean, like a solution to a problem now. Want to quickly go into market. Of course, I mean, like when we create something very fundamental, I mean, like very groundbreaking, that's going to add, I mean, like an enormous value to the company. Yes, I mean, like we do patent, I mean, like those things. And when that happens, I mean, like there are university regulations for how to do that. I mean, like sometimes, I mean, like it's jointly owned. Sometimes it's owned by the university, I mean, licensed by the company. Sometimes the companies can then outright purchase, I mean, like from the university and take it away from them. Actually. Hmm. Okay. So all kinds of model. We are fairly flexible, I mean, like on all these things.
Very good. So you guys is there any project right now that you're looking at specifically in lighting that you guys haven't done before or anything new to the industry that we're not really aware?
Let me preface that a little bit, Greg.
Yeah.
So we sell light bulbs every day.
Okay.
Okay. So our lighting systems, you know, however you want to do it. So our interest is, you know, how can we get ahead? How can our listeners to the podcast, like what should we be looking out for that's going to be adopted very quickly in the future that's not in the market right now? Can you give us any insight into that?
I can answer it in two ways. I mean, like one, I mean, like the direct answer for that is, I mean, like all of us know, I mean, like there are emerging areas in lighting. I mean, like one of the biggest area is connected lights. Okay. So there's going to be, I mean, like enormous convergence of, I mean, like multiple technologies coming together where light will also play one of the critical roles in that. So that's a critical area that everybody should watch out, in my opinion. Okay, we can't live in isolation. I mean, like we are the lighting people. I mean, like really can't live in isolation. They have to talk to the network people. They have to talk to the HVAC people. I mean, like they have to talk to the, I mean, like energy managers, or neurophysicians. Okay, because you look into health and well-being of people in that case. So I mean, like convergence of all those things is what we have to look into. And similarly, I mean, like there is also, I mean, like expansion of light applications in other areas. One of the major thrusts that is coming out is, I mean, like horticultural lighting.
Yeah, okay. Horticultural lighting.
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, like we have to feed the world, and I mean, like we have to feed them in an energy efficient way.
Whenever we talk about horticultural lighting, it always is cannabis. You didn't even say that, Greg. The first thing you said was food.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So, from a scientific research perspective, not a business perspective, when you look at horticultural lighting, you're thinking about feeding the world, doctor?
Yeah, that's the question. I mean, like because I mean, like cannabis. I mean, even if it is legalized. We haven't done any project. Every week or every other week, I get a call from some company for doing cannabis lighting, okay? Or at least solving a problem about that. And we have been, I mean, like deflecting all these things because, I mean, like it's not legal, okay?
Right.
So we don't want to tread into an area, I mean, like where it's not legal. Okay. That said, I mean, like we are not even sure. I mean, like when it becomes legal, I mean, like tobacco is legal. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether I will be helping people to grow tobacco.
Okay, I get it.
So I mean, like I would rather focus on feeding the people. Okay.
Sure.
Or I mean, like getting the best nutritional food. I mean, like in cities, in urban areas, where people can grow. I mean, like in their own spaces, or I mean, like close to their home. Okay. So those are the bigger challenges that, I mean, like, as I said in the very beginning, I mean, like, one of the biggest thing, mantra of Impact Center is what we call a science to society. Okay.
Science for society.
Science to society.
Science to society, okay.
So
okay.
We want to take the science to society, okay? And we want to solve the societal problems, I mean, like, leveraging the knowledge that we generate. When that said, we're not sure, I mean, like, whether we want to, I mean, like, go in that direction or not, okay? even if it is legal, we are not sure. Okay, we haven't made up our mind. I mean, like, but it's a big talk that has to go within our department. Okay.
Is the implementation of lighting, in your opinion, in a given space, an art or a science?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's a mix of both. I mean, like, it's a mix of both. I mean, like, okay, I'm a scientist, okay? So I come from, I mean, like, scientific background. I mean, like, I know, I mean, like, how complex things are, okay? Mm-hmm. And I would never, I mean, like, underestimate, I mean, like, the value of science, I mean, like, in bringing that thing over there, okay? But then at the end of the day, I mean, like, when you put it in that space, you have to put the right kind of light that beyond energy efficiency, beyond, I mean, like, the color quality and everything. I mean, like, at the end of the day, the users have to like that, okay? And somebody who is entering into that space should think that, I mean, like, they should be welcomed into that space.
But here's the thing. I tell my sales reps all the time, this is interesting, what's the best color temperature for an office, right? I say, whatever the customer thinks is the best color temperature. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if you're sitting in front of a client and you're like, well, you should really use 3,000 Kelvin or 3,500 Kelvin, and here's why, and the guy's like, I want it white. Well, but no, you should use this, No, I want it white. Okay, you're going to get it white. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, there's such a human see light. And on this show, we often talk about, I mean, Tom Butters was talking about it from the IES, Greg, about educating the industry and then educating the general population. There's so much emerging now in the lighting field in terms of Kelvin temperature, tunability, what kind of light at certain times. I don't think anybody knows what's best right now, Doctor.
Yeah, I mean, like, see, the other part of what we do at Impact Center is helping, I mean, like, young entrepreneurs grow, okay? I won't go into that, I mean, like, but sure. We tell our young entrepreneurs, listen to the customer, okay? Just go to the market and listen to the customer. Even before you make the product, you go talk to them, find out about what they want, okay? Create a product that they are going to like it, okay? Unless, I mean, like, they like it, they're not going to be happy. I mean, like, even if you save energy, even if you say that, I mean, like, this is really, I mean, like, good for you, you can educate them, okay? You can educate them about the health benefits of having a certain kind of light, okay? There's enormous amount of knowledge that is coming out nowadays about those things. You can educate the customers, but you have to be patient. Okay, first thing that I would do is to listen to the customer, fulfill their, I mean, like, mood. I mean, like, what they want in that working space, or, I mean, like, at their homes and things like that. Okay, and then you can slowly educate them about the benefits of energy efficiency, the benefit of using the right kind of, I mean, like, wavelength for that will help your health and things like that. You have to bring them. Okay. You can't, I mean, like, impose it on them, definitely.
Yeah, what does the customer want to buy, Greg?
Exactly. Another question. What do you consider healthy lighting?
I would say that, first of all, I mean, like, I would preface that we don't have a complete knowledge about this yet, okay? The knowledge is emerging. I mean, like, it's a very new field, okay? You guys are working in lighting. I mean, like, you know about that. For how many years we have been starting to think about these things?
Okay. Well, health effects of lighting have been a snake oil business for my entire career.
Yeah.
Until very recently.
Yeah.
And even until I interviewed Dr. Mariana Figuera, I was always going, I don't know about this, right? Because in the past, you know, people would sell fluorescent tubes that were full spectrum and that could cure seasonal affective disorder and these types of things. But they had no proof of this. And the first time I encountered the health effects of lighting was my show with Dr. Arnold Wilkins, where he talked about the impacts of flickering fluorescent tubes. So I think, you know, I know Dr. Figuero has proven that she can help Alzheimer's patients. Was there something else, Greg, that she had also had studies on, like real double-blind studies that proved that there was an impact? Was there something else, or is it
I think
just
that was
Alzheimer's?
A primary one.
Yeah,
the primary. There might have been autistic patients, but I don't recall exactly.
No, as far as I heard about, I mean, like, her work, I mean, like, followed her work.
Sure.
It's largely related to elderly adults.
Yes.
And particularly, I mean, like, those, I mean, like, the early onset of dementia and, I mean, like, and the following things on that. She has done a lot of nice work on that field. So, I mean, like, about three. 5 years back, I mean, like when I was telling to my colleagues at the Impact Center, who are, I mean, like most of them are PhDs,
okay.
That, I mean, like there are non-visual effects that lights can, I mean, like induce in that, and we have to watch out for that, and we have to create the right kind of light for that.
Where are you guys at with that? Are you guys doing research on that right now?
We are, I mean, like we are not doing any core research on non-visual effects, but we want to exploit the knowledge that has emerged out right now and help our industry partners create the light that will, I mean, like incorporate some of the knowledge that is going into that. For example, I mean, like one of the things that I'm personally started to work on is, I mean, like creating specific light for elderly population. Okay, because I mean, like that's a big challenge in developing countries, that population is aging. And there is
developing
countries.
Okay, really? Like India and China and places like that?
Sorry. I mean, my
developed
countries.
So Germany, Canada, United States.
Okay. I mean, Japan. I mean, I lived in Japan for 2 years. I've seen that happening over there. They want to create robots to help people, I mean, like elderly people.
Okay? Sure.
We want to create, I mean, like the right kind of light that will help people to be in their home. Okay, not move into care facilities.
Mm.
I mean, like not move into the...
So what's the outcome you want for them then?
So the outcome is that, I mean, like...
They sleep better?
On the local level, I want them to sleep better. I want them to have the right mood. I mean, like, I don't want them...
Mood. M-O-O-D.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I want them to have, I mean, like...
So scientists know that lighting affects mood?
Yeah, it does.
They know that it affects mood?
It does. I mean, like, especially, I mean, like, in...
like, artificial lighting can impact how you feel during the day?
Yeah.
They know that.
Yeah.
Do they know how to fix it?
We don't know how to fix it. We are not yet there. I mean, like, we know that the light affects the mood. Okay. There are lots of studies that have gone into that to do that. Especially, I mean, like, the focus is largely on Alzheimer and dementia patients, where they, I mean, like, get very easily irritated. I mean, like, if they are in a particular type of lighting or a light that flickers and things like that.
Okay. Is that because they're more sensitive? Is that because their body is distressed by this disease?
Yeah.
They become more sensitive. But everybody is sensitive to a certain extent to this sort of thing.
Yeah, that's true. I tell my son, I mean, like the other day I was telling him that, I mean, like in your age you can jump and break your bone and it'll mend. Okay. In my age it won't do that. Okay? But both of us will break our bones. Okay?
Right.
That's
yeah.
the truth. Okay. You can get it easily mended. I won't get easily mended. That's why we want to pay a lot of attention to elderly population, because it's very difficult to fix them. Okay.
Yeah.
So you want to do it right that they don't break.
Yeah, so if they're more sensitive to these things, they will lead us to things that will help everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a big problem, big issue, because I mean, like, unless you help them, okay, the caregivers are going to be stressed. Okay,
so is the health effects of lighting a mental health issue largely?
No, it is, I mean, like, there are non-visual effects that affects the hormonal activity inside the body, okay?
Okay.
It's not purely mental, okay?
Okay.
And so, I mean, like, it's one thing leading to the other thing, okay? The non-visual effects leading to hormonal imbalances. The hormonal imbalances leading to, I mean, like, disturbed sleep, I mean, like, and midnight waking and things like that. And that leads to, I mean, like, irritations, I mean, like, anxiety and, I mean, like, and fear and things. So it's kind of, I mean, like, a cascading of effort. The mood comes as a byproduct of, I mean, like, the whole series of things that are going on. And by fixing the light, you probably, I mean, like, can fix some of them. I say that probably, because we don't have, I mean, like, 100%, I mean, like, knowledge about those things.
And there's also variant factors. Like, how do you factor out the other things that may be causing someone to be depressed other than, so, like, let's say the lighting is a 15%.
Yeah.
And then they're going through a divorce.
Yeah.
And it's 50%.
Yeah.
And then, you know, maybe their mother is sick and they're not doing well at work. How would you actually parse in a study, how would you parse out a variable factor analysis? Is that what it's called? Like, yeah. Where you parse out an effect?
Yeah.
How would you do that?
I'm not somebody who works in that field.
Okay.
But I mean, like, scientifically, what we do is that's where, I mean, like, we go to large ensemble of samples.
Okay. Okay.
We go to diverse set of people and then do, I mean, like, a double blind test on
okay.
that. Okay. And then watch out, I mean, like, the outcomes of those things, I mean, like, over an extended period of time. Okay. And then you formulate, I mean, like, your results on the basis of those things. So you can't really, I mean, like, test randomly few people and say that I changed their light in their house and they're happy. Okay. That's not science.
Hmm.
Okay. that's maybe, I mean, like they're happy due to other things. As you said, I mean, like maybe, I mean, like their marital relationship got better.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, yeah. So, I mean, like you can't take credit for everything.
Sure.
But in science, what we tend to do is, I mean, like you do, I mean, like as much controlled as possible in a large number of sample, and then, I mean, like evaluate the outcome of that to formulate, I mean, like certain recipe that can come out of that actually. Okay. That's the way that we go about it.
Now, this one's maybe changing gears, but a little random at the same time, but it is science related. And since you're a scientist, maybe you can help us on this. Is I've been hearing about LEDs that are going to disinfect your building, UV LED light source. Are you guys doing any studies with that?
We are not doing anything. I mean, like, again, I'm saying that, I mean, like, it's people are equating one thing to the, I mean, like, they know something that is happening. I mean, like, you can't really, I mean, like, extrapolate things, I mean, like, in a gross way, okay? So, I mean, UV as a disinfectant is a very well-known fact, okay?
Okay.
But the amount of UV intensity that you need to do disinfection is really very high, okay?
Right, and okay. It's not, is that good for humans?
Yeah. So I mean like.
No, but is that amount of UV with that?
No.
So I have a UV light, I live on a farm, so I have a UV water filtration system, that, and it goes in front of the light, but you can't look at that light.
Yeah.
Like you can't turn it on and have it shine in your eyes.
Yeah.
So is there possible that they could admit, I think what you're asking is like hospital rooms, oh, we're going to disinfect them with the light. But if you're killing bacteria, are you hurting humans at the same time?
In the case of, I mean, like water purification systems, I mean, like you don't directly expose human to that UV radiation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So you are, I mean, like passing water through the UV disinfection system, which can instantaneously kill, I mean, like large amount of bacteria in that. Okay? And that's really good. I mean, like that's a proven thing that everybody uses. That
sure.
all municipalities in the world, I mean, like use that.
Sure.
Thing, okay. And we also use it at homes. Okay. On the other hand, I mean, like you have to see that. I mean, like in case of, I mean, like water purification, you make that go through a very tiny area.
Yes.
Where you can have a very high intensity of UV that can kill the bacteria. Okay. If you want to do that kind of, I mean, like intensity in a room like this, you have to use enormous amount of UV energy for that. Okay. And also one should remember that killing half bacteria or some of those hand sanitizers, they claim that 99.9%, okay? 99.9% is not good, okay? Because what's going to happen is that, I mean, like, the remaining 1 in 1,000, okay, 1 in 100, 1 in 1,000 will be the most resistant one, and they start breeding that, actually, okay? And you now have, I mean, like, some bacterial colony that is resistant to whatever you are doing, okay? Drug resistance to antibiotics is a huge thing that is people are talking about now, actually. So unless you thoroughly disinfect, doing half disinfection, that's why you say, you have to take antibiotics for the full course, okay? So similarly, I mean, like, even if you use UV and if you kill only, I mean, like, a part of it, it's going to, I mean, like, repopulate the whole place again, okay?
And it's going to be a stronger bacteria.
Yeah, it's going to be strong. It can be, okay?
So we're actually causing the evolution of bacteria?
Yeah, we do. I mean, like, and it's very clear. I mean, like, drug-resistant bacteria.
I hear about that, but it's actually humans are by killing 99.1%, the 0.8% is a super bug or something.
Yeah, we do that. I mean, like, okay, and it's a proven thing. I mean, like, drug resistance to, I mean, like.
So be careful with lighting systems that disinfect, I guess, eh, Greg?
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like.
I don't buy into that.
You don't?
Okay. Yeah, unless you really want to do it thoroughly, I mean, like, let's not do it, I mean, like, in a kind of, I mean, like,
half measure.
Yeah. Okay.
Another thing, I was looking on your website on Impact Center, and I see their impact projects. One of them is the Global Lighting Project, and I see that, you know, right on the front homepage here, it says 1 billion people in the world do not have access to light.
Yeah.
So what exactly are you guys doing with that?
So, I mean, I grew up in a developing country, okay? So, okay. I didn't have electrical lighting in my home until I was 12 years old.
Okay.
So, I know about that. I mean, like, when the light comes, it changes your life, okay? So, you are going to have, I mean, like, a completely different life. I mean, like, our productive hours, I mean, like, increased, I mean, like, from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock every day, okay? So, and the whole family's thing changed. My brother became a first graduate in the extended family. My father went back and registered in continuing education to complete his degree and things like that. So, I see that I equate light with the prosperity, okay? Not just with health, I mean, like, with prosperity. So, developing countries, many people, I mean, like, just after 6 o'clock at sundown, there is absolutely nothing for them, okay? They just have to, I mean, like, go sit in some corner and talk about it for some time. Or, I mean, like, they drink and they sleep. I mean, like, that's all they do, okay? So you want to, I mean, like, help them to have the same kind of life that you have by extending the productive hours, I mean, like, that they have. Okay. So that's the biggest thing. Other thing is, I mean, like, again, I mean, like, education is a crucial thing, okay? The kids can't study in places. The third thing is the personal safety. Many places in the world use, I mean, like, open kerosene lamps. And they are a huge fire hazard, okay? Leave alone the fire hazard. I mean, like, a girl sitting next to it for, I mean, like, extended, let's say that, I mean, like, 7-8 years at early childhood with that carbon suit that is coming out directly from that is not good for her, okay, for an extended period of time, okay? She's getting exposed to 2-3 hours every day over, I mean, the cumulative effect over life.
Of burning kerosene.
Yeah, just sit right next to it. Even if you don't burn your house, you are causing harm, okay? So, I mean, like, electric light can change a lot of things.
Do humans have a right to artificial light?
Yeah, we do. But I mean, like, with every right comes the responsibility, okay? So you have to use it the right way. I mean, like, you don't want to pollute with light everywhere. I mean, like, you don't want to, I mean, like, overuse things. So you have to use it with...
There's so many conflicting issues in lighting, Greg. There's just so many conflicting issues. You have, like, security light. Like, so, for example, you light up a highway between, I don't know, name two cities in the middle of nowhere in Minnesota, Greg, that people might not.
In the middle of
nowhere. Yeah, let's say you light up the highway between North Bay and Thunder Bay, right? Mm-hmm. And you think, wow, this is great. And then all of a sudden you hear that bird migration patterns are now being affected or animal behaviors being affected. I remember there's this one thing in Florida where they switched, excuse me, they put LED lights in instead of low pressure sodium, and the turtles were thinking they were the moon and going the wrong way. Like, instead of running to the baby turtles were going, instead of going to the ocean, they were running towards the LED lights. There's so many conflicting different areas around lighting. You have dark sky versus security versus energy efficiency versus health impacts, and then color temperature and all these sort of things. Are we ever going to put this thing together, doctor, and into one thing that we know is good?
No, I mean, like, we won't put them
together,
okay? We won't put them together, but you have to see that, I mean, like, science collectively, I mean, like, emerges and grows all the time, okay? Mm-hmm. And as we grow, I mean, like, we are going to have more doubts, I mean, like, about what we are doing, okay? Mm-hmm. One of the biggest things that science tells you is, I mean, like, how to doubt things, okay? So if you know, I mean, like, if I know everything, I mean, like, I stop and go home. I mean, like, I don't have a job, okay, to work. Okay? So you need to, I mean, like, keep constantly asking questions. Our complex knowledge is going to keep on emerging in those things. And the fields are going to, as you said, the fields are going to become more and more complex. We have to talk to ornithologists now. I mean, like, lighting people, I mean, like, can't live in isolation.
Ornithologists, for all our listeners out there, are people that study birds?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, okay. So we have to talk to them. I mean, like, before we put a street light somewhere, we have to talk to them maybe. Okay? So, I mean, like, and this dialogue will continue. I mean, like, we are going to bring, I mean, like, more and more diverse set of people, I mean, like, unfold, and everybody, I mean, like, will start interplaying, I mean, like, in the whole thing that we are doing. So we will never lay this to rest, I mean, like, in future, but we are going to get better all the time, okay? That's the biggest thing that science does for all of us.
See, a couple things with the LED revolution that's been going on, I'm going to call it a revolution, in the last 4 years is, so lighting used to be a very boring, mm-hmm. incremental improvement business, and it's turned into maybe one of the most dynamic, fast-changing, fast-moving businesses there is out there. I mean, you got so many different angles in lighting now that are really mind-blowing in some ways. But what I've seen is the replication of old problems that were solved in the LED world, and then people having to go like LED flicker. So LED flicker is actually worse than T12 flicker. So we've recreated these problems. And then we've also discussed, you know, who's sort of leading the business? Is it the IES? Is it, you know, who are the leaders? Who do you think we should look to for leadership, Dr. Venkat, in terms of in lighting right now?
See, I mean, there are multiple leaders, I mean, like, in this field, okay? I mean, like, organizations like IES do, I mean, like, very good, great job. I mean, mm-hmm. Okay? I work with the CIE, I mean, like, International Commission on Illumination.
It's the International...
Commission on Illumination. You probably might have seen the CIE chromaticity diagram, okay? You can see that as, I mean, like, CIE as a more fundamental version of IES.
Okay, more fundamental.
More fundamental version. So a CAE tends to create, I mean, like more fundamental standards, and IES, I mean, like tend to create very applied standards that are industry specific.
Okay.
So we, I mean, for example, we define the way that color has to be, I mean, like specified, like CAE chromaticity diagram, and then I mean, like on the top of it, IES say that for this application, you need this chromaticity.
Okay.
So that's the way things work.
So CAE is scientists and IES are more like applied engineers?
Yeah, but CAE also had large number of, I mean, like industry presence. Okay. CAE is an international organization. IES is North American.
Okay. Okay.
So I mean, like those kind of organizations will play, I mean, like a very critical role. I mean, like in first of all, I mean, like studying things better, and also, I mean, like help to tell people, I mean, like educate people about, I mean, the right way of doing things. And then the role that is played by big industries and small industries. Okay, small industries really can't, I mean, like, devote so much into, I mean, like, advancing the whole area over there. But by contributing, I mean, like, doing things in a very innovative way, they are going to push things forward. Okay?
Mm.
The big industries, I mean, have a way, and also they have the responsibility to do it the right way. They have to create the light without flicker. Okay, so by doing that, I mean, like, they will tell the rest of the people, will start competing with them. Okay. By creating the light without flicker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they have to lead, I mean, like, in that way. And then, I mean, like, people like us at university, we have a responsibility to develop, I mean, like, better and better understanding about all these things that is going to help on all these things.
Mm.
Okay. So it's a collective responsibility. I mean, like, no single person, I mean, like, or no single group of people can do that. But at the end of the day, all of us have to work together, constantly together. Okay.
Mm.
What do you think of the DLC?
Okay. So DLC has done a very good job, I mean, like, in terms of bringing a lot of order into the chaos that was having there. Okay? I'm involved with that, I mean, like, in the very early stage, I mean, like, of energy efficiency by U.S. Department of Energy, and, I mean, like, and the few hydros in Northeast coming together to put that together. So they have, I mean, like, really saved a lot of hydros, I mean, like, in replicating the work. Before DLC, think about a world without them, okay? What would happen? Every hydro is going to have their own set of rules and regulations to incentivize this energy efficient technology, okay? And that's going to lead to a lot of chaos, okay? So DLC has brought a lot of order into that, okay? Definitely, I mean, like, but then, I mean, like, I have a company that helps people to get DLC certification, okay? We have a test and measurement company where, I mean, like, we serve about roughly 65 to 70% of Canadian lighting manufacturers to get DLC certification, okay? So they test in that company, and I constantly keep hearing from the manufacturers about the increasing requirements and the increasing complexity, the delays that in getting a product certified and things like that. But since I know, I mean,
there's
like,
a lot of resentment in the, from manufacturers towards the DLC,
yeah,
for sure.
But since I also, I mean, like, know the other side of it, I mean, like, I know, I mean, like, how DLC works. I have a lot of great friends in DLC, so we know, I mean, like, what are their challenges. Okay, I don't see, I mean, like, a better way. I mean, like, let's put it this way: there are other organizations, similar organizations. Okay, let's take Energy Star. Okay,
sure.
Okay, so I mean, like, you submit something to Energy Star and to DLC, you know who is going to respond it first.
DLC?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. Okay.
Okay, but there's IEEE 1789 standard.
Mm-hmm.
There's the JAGA consortium.
Yeah.
There's the DLC. What else am I missing here, Greg? What do you call those guys? The safety certification standard guys with CSA or
OSHA,
UL or and CUL,
OSHA, UL, also,
OSHA.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of compliance fatigue going on in the lighting business right now with so many different standards, and which ones are you going to adhere to, and so on. I'm in the middle. I see both sides of that argument, Greg. I mean, do you want to jump in here with something on that, or are you done with the compliance fatigue? We've talked a lot about it on the show.
We've talked a lot. I think there is, you know, the Dr. Venkat's comment. I think it is something that's necessary. Who's the right organization to do it? I don't know if I have that answer, but I think it needs to narrow it down some, and we need some defining characteristics, because we talk a lot about quality light, because there's so many options in the marketplace, and people can really put anything out that they want. But if we want to actually implement quality light, we need somebody to say, here's what quality is.
Yeah,
so I that's mean, like, my two cents. I don't know who the right one is.
Yeah, and but Greg's always been a proponent that the DLC is doing the best job out there.
Yeah. I mean,
is that the way to put it, Greg? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I
would say so. Yep.
I concur with that. I mean, like I told that. I mean, like without TLC, the place would have been, I mean, like even more chaotic.
Mm.
Okay, DLC and US, uh-huh. US Department of Energy have done really good job. I mean, like in doing this. Let's try to answer this question. I mean, like there are, I mean, like a plethora of standards. I mean, like plethora of organizations that do these things. IEEE, UL. I mean, like CSA. I mean, like DLC. All those things. But if you start, I mean, like layering things down, each one has a role to play. Like I said, I mean, like CAE creates more fundamental standards,
mm-hmm.
okay, that defines things. And I mean, like IES tells about, I mean, like specific ways of doing things for a particular job. I mean, mm-hmm. like, okay, how to fit lights for hospitals in healthcare, in schools and things like that. And then, I mean, like there is also safety requirement. Okay, and then when we starting to learn about, I mean, like new complex things like Flickr, okay, somebody else who is a specialist has to step in, okay. This is not something that we can do it from internally, I mean, like with the people who know only about lighting.
Mm.
People who know about electrical circuits, I mean, like how do they behave? They have to step in and they have to, IEEE has to come in that place. Okay?
Mm.
So everybody has to do their own role. Unfortunately, lighting is no longer a simple product.
Yeah,
it's
for sure.
Not a bulb that you take and screw it into the base. Okay?
Mm.
It is a complex product that has, I mean, like multiple different things. And I mean, like they are designed in a complex way that, I mean, like, there is, I mean, like only few right ways to do those things and several wrong ways to do those things. Okay.
Sure.
And so there have to be, I mean, like lot of standards to prevent the wrong way of doing things.
I'm yeah, like, for okay. sure.
I mean, we create, it's a complex world and complex world needs complex regulations. Okay. It is fatiguing. I mean, like I know that
complex,
I mean, like,
world bad. Needs complex regulations. Oh man,
you can't simplify. I don't see any other way of doing things. Okay. You can't, people who deal with, for example, I mean, like in light quality, okay, they can't tell about the safety, okay, how the light is going to work. I mean, like when you are putting it outside,
sure.
when it is raining all day, only UL people can tell those things. Okay?
Sure.
So everybody has a role to play in those things. And believe me, it's going to get even more complex. Okay, tomorrow we are going to talk about, I mean, like when you start, I mean, like integrating sensors to them.
Yeah, I know.
Okay? And integrating that as a part of the bigger building thing. Okay, there is an interoperability standard that's going to emerge.
So an interoperability standard that's going to emerge, is it going to fly? Are people going to be forced to comply with the interoperability standard by government regulation?
Yeah, I mean, it works in two ways. I mean, like there are voluntary standards and there are, I mean, like regulatory standards.
Okay.
Okay? In certain cases like safety, okay, there is no other way of doing that other than, I mean, like being regulatory.
Sure.
Okay? So without that, you can't plug that into wall. Okay. That's yeah, the yeah. way to tell that. Okay. And in some cases, this is the right way to do the things. Okay. You tell, educate people, you tell people and they will do the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know, I mean, like which way it will go, but I think, I mean, like industry as a whole will, I mean, like converge onto something and accept something on interoperability, because I mean, like without that, I mean, like it's not possible, because we started seeing the benefits of interoperating things. Okay, how do I mean, like I put a light over in this room and I put a bunch of sensors into that talks into the building system, that lowers the window shade, I mean, like when it is too bright outside, immediately I mean, like cut down the light to save energy, and also I mean, like increasing the AC, I mean, like and when I move out of the room, I mean, like automatically lock the door and shut down the lighting. I mean, like we have started seeing the benefits of that. Even, I mean, like small homes, I mean, like smart homes have started seeing the benefit of this, and we are not going to step back and lose that, actually. We are going to, I mean, like make them work together.
Mm.
And so some kind of, I mean, like interoperability framework has to emerge.
Okay. I have a question that's a little bit off lighting, but if we were to able to generate all our energy cleanly, would any of this matter?
You still have responsibility.
Like, if, let's say our energy was 100% renewable.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because right now the thrust is like, well, if we do this, we'll save energy. If we do this, we'll save energy. We lower the thing and the HVAC will go down and da-da-da-da. But if we could just make all our electricity clean and all you had to do is pay for it, then who cares if the things are automatic or not?
Okay. So since this is a very broader question, I mean, like...
It's a broad question, yeah. That's what I think to myself. It's like we're at the one end, you have gas-powered energy, and there's countries in the world like... Ontario is very clean.
Yeah.
Okay. It's like one of the cleanest jurisdictions in the world for energy,
yeah,
right?
Definitely.
Whereas you take Germany, for example, they're burning coal, right? And so, you know, 90% of their energy is from coal, right? So they're 500. I was at a conference and the OP, Ontario Power Generation, put up a slide saying, this is Ontario, this is Europe, and we're way cleaner. We've met our Kyoto Protocol. If we had clean energy, why waste our time on with all these finicky, nitpicky things in terms of energy reduction at the end? If we had clean energy, just put in an incandescent light bulb and forget about it.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, like, I would try to answer this question, I mean, like, completely outside science.
Sure, yeah, okay. Yeah, no, philosophically.
So, philosophically, okay. I mean, like, I don't want to say that word, but, I mean, like, as you become affluent, I mean, like, you have more responsibility.
Okay.
Okay, so that's how I think, I mean, like, what everybody has to think. The richer you become, the more charitable you should be.
Right, but not more complex.
It need not have to be complex.
Yes, you have to have complex regulations, you said.
No, you don't need to be complex, okay? That is where, I mean, like, the voluntary things come in.
Okay.
So, I mean, like, if people start, I mean, like, not being, I mean, like, so self-centric that, okay, I'm okay, I live in a comfortable house, I mean, like, I don't care about my society, then, I mean, like, it's society one day is going to, I mean, like, one day you are going to step out of the house, okay? Okay, and that's going to be
one
dangerous
day, right?
For you, okay? And that's going to be dangerous for you. Okay?
Sure.
So, I mean, like, it's my collective responsibility. As I become more affluent, I have to become more charitable also. I have to look into the people, why they are not able to do it the clean way that I'm doing.
Mm.
Okay. Maybe they have constraints. Okay. Germany have no other way other than burnt coal. Okay?
But are you saying that Canada has a responsibility for people that don't live in Canada?
I would say that, I mean, like, yeah, definitely. Okay. Definitely, we have. I mean, like, that's where, I mean, like, your moral superiority will come. Okay.
Okay. So, I'm not sure, but I'm listening to you.
Yeah,
I mean
like, that's
we got to bring it back to lighting. Greg's looking at me here.
Yeah, I know.
We're on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast,
okay,
but
probably. Okay.
I'm not. I don't know about. That's a tough one to say that, you know, hey, Canadians have a responsibility to help who? Haitians?
No.
I mean, who?
No,
right?
No, it is not. I mean, like, wherever it is needed, as the case may be.
That's endless.
Mean, yeah. It is endless, okay? But that's the way that it should be, because, I mean, like, unless you kind of, I mean, like, take a bigger responsibility to the society, okay, it's going to be, I mean, like, some way come back and hurt you.
Okay. So all these things that we're doing in lighting, all the research we're doing, everything that we're doing is part of a larger picture to make a cleaner, better society. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why we are interested in global lighting. Mm. Okay. That's why we are able to come. Like, we just can't ignore the population that is living without lighting. We have a bit of responsibility because we know how to build that light.
Is artificial light the greatest human invention?
So, I mean, like, okay, let's call it as electrical lighting. I mean, like, that's okay, the right way of calling it.
Yeah.
Okay. So electrical lighting is, I would say that, I mean, like, would come in the top three or something
like
that.
Like toilet lighting?
Yeah,
lighting.
I think one of the journals.
Like plumbing,
Time,
toilet,
Times,
sewage.
Times or one of those
Time
responded. I mean, like, no, the journal, Time or New York Time rated toilet as one of the
Economist rated
oh,
toilet.
Maybe, yeah.
The Economist rated the
yeah.
toilet. Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I would say that artificial intelligence, I mean, like, is the great.
Intelligence.
Sorry, I mean, like, sorry, electrical lighting.
Electrical lighting.
Will rate as one of the top three.
Okay.
Because you see that, I mean, like, it without artificial lighting, we don't have, I mean, like, productive hours, I mean, like, after sundown.
Right.
Okay? It's the greatest productivity tool that human beings ever invented. Okay. Toilet is, I mean, like, maybe the hygienic tool. I mean, like, it solved a whole bunch of health problems, health issues and things like that. But, I mean, like, in terms of productivity, there is no better tool than lighting.
So artificial lighting and electric lighting is the greatest productivity tool humans ever invented.
Yeah, it is. I mean, like, that's why, I mean, like, I'm so proud to work in that field.
Yeah.
I mean, like, okay.
I think that's a great place to end the podcast, Greg. What do you think?
Absolutely. Can't end it any better.
Yeah. We're in the industry that has provided the greatest productivity to humans in the history of all inventions, and now is on the cusp and the threshold of helping health issues, of improving quality of life, to bringing productivity to poorer nations. This is a great business. Dr. Venkat, I really appreciate you coming on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. It was fun. I mean, like, it's nice talking to you guys.
Yeah, really nice to talk to you as well.
Thanks. Okay.
Kurtzon.com. Go to KURTZON.com. Baby, that's Kurtzon.com. Greg, what are we talking about with these medical light fixtures for hospitals and exam rooms? Tell me a little bit more about that. Maddie, throw it up on the screen for the YouTube viewers.
Well, first of all, is the fact that they actually have them. A lot of manufacturers do not have specialized fixtures like this. And it's something you don't think about a lot, but in a medical application, you need to have specific fixtures for that environment. They have exam room troffers, operating room troffers, MRI downlights, surgical downlights, patient room troffers. They cover everything you need for that type of facility, and they have a specialized light fixture made in LED just for that.
Yeah, you know, Kurtzon's really ahead of the game when it comes to covering off all those specification grade applications. So if you are, if you're specifying new builds, renovations in the medical field, or really anywhere else where there's lighting where you need to have fixtures that are solid and great, you got to go to Kurtzon.com, baby. KURTZON.com. That's Kurtzon.com. And Greg, what about the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, who really helped us get this thing started and has sponsored not every episode, but everyone from the fourth on? What do we got to say about those guys today? We're members.
Yeah, we're members, and I think they're the best lighting-focused association that we have in the industry today. Somebody that's really geared towards what's happening next and trying to, you know, keep an eye out on what's going to the future of lighting is going to look like. So that's what we're all about in this podcast. That's what the association's all about. So definitely someone to be a part of if you're in lighting.
For sure. So go to NAILD.org. That's NAILD.org for training, joining, convention, all that sort of stuff. We'd also like to say, hey, Dr. Venkat, thank you for coming on the show. That was a really real honor for Greg and I to have someone of your stature come on in and sit down in studio and take the time to talk to us and tell us what you're doing at the University of Toronto and along with the Smart Sustainable Lighting Network. It was really good. So thanks to Dr. Venkat, all of our sponsors. That's episode 33, Get a Grip on Lighting.
Written on the rectory wall, there's a sign there for all. You are lost, Lord is there to find you. Boys, I know it's hard, temptation's all abroad. All you need is calm, the door's always open. There'll be